I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hi everyone, and welcome to Pixels, a podcast for the discerning gamer. Hello everyone, and welcome back to Pixels. This is a show where we cover the video gaming news from the past couple of weeks. My name is Patrick Beja, and today I'm joined by Jake Wesson, also known as Spaz, from Reigns of Azeroth. How's it going, sir? You're in Australia, so...
Yes.
Should I... G'day. I don't know. There you go. G'day. There you go.
Yeah.
You know where I know g'day is Australian from?
Where?
From Overwatch. Junkrat says, "G'day, mate!"
And yes, he does. Yeah. It's one of my favorite hellos from, like, everyone in the game. So
Yeah, it's pretty good. And so it's good that you're here because we're going to be talking about World of Warcraft Legion, which came out a few days ago. And we're going to be doing that at the end of the show. So if you're not interested in World of Warcraft, you don't have to listen to that. But certainly, I am very interested. I've been playing nonstop for a few days, and I'm guessing you've been playing a little bit as well.
Just a little bit. Have you hit 110?
No, I just hit 109, and then I had to come and do the show, which
I hit 108 this morning.
So we'll be talking about our experience. We've experienced a good chunk of the leveling content, and we'll talk about how we feel about that that expansion at the end of the show. But first, a bunch of news stories. The first one being that No Man's Sky, which we talked about, and I guess the entire industry has been talking about at length for the past few weeks, is, I wouldn't say seeing a backlash, not more than it had in the beginning with the big questions of how deep the game is, but apparently a lot of big outlets are issuing full refunds, even though in contradiction or defiance of their established policies. Like Steam is offering refunds to No Man's Sky, even if you have played beyond the 2-hour limit that they usually, you know, you have to have played less than a couple of hours to be able to get a refund. And Sony is doing refunds. Amazon is doing refunds. What is that actually a big deal? I know you wanted to talk about it, Jake.
Well, the thing is, a couple of stories that I've seen on it, people were just kind of using this as a haha, stick it to the developer kind of thing. Like, okay, if you actually want a refund, you have to go to where you bought it. Don't use the automated system like on Steam. You have to actually put in a ticket. And if you tell them, like, this specific set of bullet points, then they'll give you a refund. Like, people have kind of min-maxed it to be like, if you say, not what I, you know, false promises, not what I expected, the game doesn't run well, blah, 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 then they'll give you a refund. And it's kind of gone across the internet for people being like, do it now, get a refund, because who cares?
Like, so it's supposedly you can't just call them and say, hey, I don't like the game. It's supposed to be sort of dishonest practices in that, you know, the game isn't what I was promised when I purchased it. And I'm sure some people actually, you were mentioning you saw a few people bragging that they had played however many tens of hours and still got a refund.
Yeah, some people who had, like, taken, like, screenshots of their Steam thing saying, you know, played 70, 80, 60, like between 40 and like 80 to 80 hours of the game, and they're like, haha, I still got a refund.
Yeah, which, I mean, I don't...
But Steam already has cracked down on it, so... Because at first they were giving out the refunds, but now they're like, if you've played more than, you know, 10, 5 to 10 hours of it, then they're just straight up not going to give you a refund.
Okay, like, they're cracking down on it. It's really a case-by-case basis, basically.
Yeah.
Does it mean that it's No Man's Sky's in trouble?
I honestly, I don't know, but I enjoy it. I enjoy No Man's Sky. Like, between when No Man's Sky came out and the release of Legion, I was playing No Man's Sky for about 3 hours a night.
Right.
Just watching YouTube videos and then half playing No Man's Sky. Because
yeah, because it doesn't demand so much of your attention, I guess.
Yeah, when you get to the point, like games like Minecraft, when you can get to the point where you can basically play it with your eyes closed, it's a really good game to unwind with. It's the same with No Man's Sky. Once I knew, you know, once I knew what was carbon, what was peridium, what was this, what was that, you know, and what bits and pieces I needed for my ship, and I knew them off the top of my head and didn't have to think about it, it became kind of a passive game. And, you know, I think at one point I walked almost halfway around a planet looking for one animal that I still had to scan.
Right.
And I think I spent like, three full days on that planet just trying to find the damn thing. And
yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
It's just like, I want to platinum the game on my PS4, like get all the trophies for it. I'm about 3/4 of the way through. The only ones I don't have are like survive on an extreme planet, because I haven't come across any extreme planets yet. You know, make X number of warp jumps, because I haven't actually warp jumped that many times.
Right.
And so I catalog all the animals on one planet, which I know is going to be the most time consuming. So
I guess what you're saying is the game is fun for you, and I'm sure it's very fun for some people. I don't see that, you know, refunds, a lot of people having a lot of companies issuing refunds for No Man's Sky. I don't see it really as, you know, more than trying to appease a few people that say they're very angry, and maybe some of them will manage to be like to beat the system and to, you know, stick it to the man and haha, I played however many hours, or that game sucked and I didn't want it anyway, or it's going to be a few people. I don't think this is the kind of thing where, you know, we've seen a few instances of games that really did get a bad rap. I think this is more the community coming to terms with what they had built the game to be in their mind, and a few of them realizing that's not what it is. So, you know, yeah.
And I think like the mass of people getting the refunds is also giving a little bit of fuel to the people in the community, like that are making videos on basically No Man's Sky is horrible, No Man's Sky sucks, this, that, the other thing. And now they have an extra thing to throw on the fire and be like, and everyone's returning it.
Right.
Because it sucks. Like it's just an extra thing for them, which meh.
Yeah, which meh is exactly my reaction.
well, I enjoy it.
Sorry.
End of that.
Yeah,
I enjoy it.
I think, and I think you're not alone. I mean, definitely there are lots of people who do enjoy it, and it's fine if you don't. I mean, I played it a little bit. It wasn't my thing. And I think a lot of, for some reason, this game specifically awoke a lot of the people's feelings that if they don't like something, it's not enough that they don't like it. They have to convince everyone else that they shouldn't like it either for some reason. I don't know why, you know, the internet and people work like this, but... Yeah, it's fine. We all love different things, and that's okay. ZeniMax, talking about sticking it to the man, ZeniMax is now claiming that basically John Carmack, when he left id Software, took with him the technology that he had been developing on ZeniMax's payroll, and that's what made the Oculus Rift what it is today. Basically, they're suing Oculus and, of course, at the same time suing Facebook, since, I mean, Oculus is a company owned by Facebook now. and claiming that really the Oculus was kind of crappy little prototype that couldn't do anything before John Carmack went to them. And Carmack has been very vocal for many years about the fact that the time for VR had come again. A few years ago, he was saying this very publicly. So it's very possible that he did start working on VR at id Software. And now, the way they claim it, the way ZeniMax talks about it, it's really like the Oculus was crappy. And when Carmack went there, all of a sudden, it became amazing, an amazing machine, and that's all because of our technology. And I guess I skipped over it, but if you don't remember, Carmack left id Software, owned by ZeniMax, to go to Rift to help develop the Oculus. And Carmack is obviously a legendary game designer, and what he says many people listen to. So yeah, it seems a little bit, for lack of a better term, I'm going to say exaggerated, by ZeniMax, yeah. That account? But,
when he was working there, was it a small side project that he had that they allowed him to use, like, company resources for? Or, like, I'm not exactly sure. Like, how much did he do at the original company before he moved?
That's the big question, isn't it? I guess yeah. there are a couple of questions. How much did he do there? It seems fairly certain that he was working on something. I mean, not fair. Well, apparently, from what they're claiming, at least he was working on something related to VR, probably a VR headset when he was there. Certainly, if he was, it was on ZeniMax's payroll. Now, I guess it's really hard to decide what you believe because. If he took the technical documentation that he had been working on, if he got a bunch of working documents and emails and a bunch of things with him, that is actually theft, right? You're not allowed to do that. And that's what they claim he did. If he just worked on it and developed a bunch of things that weren't patented, and he just went there and applied that knowledge to the Oculus Rift and improved it. I'm pretty sure it wasn't as crappy as they're describing it. But still, maybe he did improve it in some ways. Then I'm not a lawyer, but I'm guessing that's okay if the technology wasn't patented. So I guess the big question is, did he go to Oculus with documents?
Yeah, that's the question. I mean, when it comes to, say, if he was an artist and he's working on one game, and then in his spare time, like, say, when he's not busy, like, say, just during work hours, he's also sketching a couple of other things. And it's like, these things will probably never get used in our game, but I'm sketching them anyway. If he then saves that on a USB drive and then puts that in his pocket and then goes to another company and he's like, oh, I've got some stuff that you guys might really like because it totally works with what you guys are doing elsewhere. Is that also the same thing, like theft of ideas? Because that's technically if he came up with those things. So it's not exactly a great analogy, but...
Yeah. No, I think it comes down... I mean, again, I'm not a lawyer, but I think it comes down to whether or not he actually did it on company's time. And even, I mean, if he did, I'm pretty sure that supposedly whatever he did belongs to the company that pays him. And that is super difficult to prove. And it's really, it might even go down to the level of were you doing it during your break time, like during lunch hour where you're not paid by the company, you know, that kind of thing, if it was that specific. In this case, though, it was what they're claiming is... very clearly that he was paid by id, by ZeniMax, to design a VR headset. So it was actually that kind of thing. So I don't know. It seems to me like they're really like exaggerating their claims for...
Yeah, yeah.
Even, you know, even if it doesn't go to trial, just so that Oculus/Facebook settles it as a nuisance claim. Maybe yeah. they're going to get a few millions out of this. I don't know. Yeah, but
well, actually, here's a question for you. Say they're working on the original product, and the cable is coming out, say, the left-hand side of the device. And he says, why don't we put it up the top so that it runs over the head of the person? And they say, no, that's a stupid idea. Scrap it. Never talk about it again. Then when he jumps ship and he's like, well, we could put it over the top. And they say, that's a great idea. Is that still theft of ideas? If it's something he designs and they shut it down and they're like, no, we don't want to do that. But then he takes that elsewhere and is like, let's try this. And then they say yes.
I suspect whatever. Well, in this, when you put it like that, it's just it. You know, it's a very non-technical thing. So I'm sure anyone could think of putting it on the. But I get what you mean. It's like if he had a specific technical idea, I think that in order for him to be able to use these kinds of things, in order to be, you know, legally cleared, I think you would have to have a document that releases you, that releases your idea, and ZeniMax says, no, we don't want it. You can use it elsewhere, which, of course, they would never do. So if it's something a little bit more technical than just, you know, where to place the cable, I don't think he could, if he did develop it at ZeniMax, I don't think he can use it, period. It is owned. Although, I mean, it depends how obvious the thing is. Clearly, there were some things that weren't patented at ZeniMax. Otherwise, they would put forward the patent pending, the patent applications. I don't know. I'm not sure. But I guess we'll. This is not the last we've heard of this. But
yeah. Well, speaking of patent. And turning that into the word patent, the Nintendo Direct, Yoshi's Woolly World, is going to be on 3DS.
Wait, patent?
I know that's a stretch of this.
No, I didn't get it.
Patent, as in like a patent that you would use to make a plush thing.
Oh, right, patent. I get it now. Yes.
It was a stretch.
Yeah, no. It was good. It was good. I'm the one who didn't get it. All right. So Yoshi's Woolly World pattern, the pattern world of Yoshi's Wool is going to be on 3DS. And that is one of the things we heard from the Nintendo Direct, which was basically the subtitle of that Nintendo Direct from yesterday could be, hey, the Wii U is over, so we're going to put stuff from the Wii U on the 3DS and hope that that development time can be used in more valuable products for us. Basically, Yoshi's Woolly World, as you said, Super Mario Maker are coming to 3DS, somewhat different versions, but still. There's also a Mario Sports Superstars, which is five sports. They insisted a lot on the fact that they are fully fledged sport experiences. It's not like mini games. It's like football, tennis, golf, horse riding, and another one, I think. That's going to be coming in spring, and then Pikmin is coming to the 3DS in 2017, but that's not the regular Pikmin. That's that's a side-scrolling action version of the Pikmin franchise. So, yay, I guess. Do you have a 3DS?
Yes.
Do you play your 3DS?
I go between my 3DS and my PS Vita. I'm one of the few people that actually plays
Me too.
With a Vita.
I have a Vita. I haven't been playing with it for a while, but I do have one.
Yeah.
So that counts for something.
Yeah. Like, a lot of the handheld games, it's just really nice that they're putting more things on handheld, and this is kind of a distraction. Like, quick, look over here while we quickly fix the NX.
Yeah.
Look over here, 3DS, 3DS. Come on, finish the NX. Like, that's... it's just a distraction method, but they're still games, they'll still be good, and it'll just help tide people over till the NX is launched.
So that's a question I have, actually. They mentioned that Mario Sports is going to be coming to the 3DS next spring. And the NX is also supposed to be launching next spring, and Pikmin is coming in 2017, which brings me to the question, how much, we've all heard the rumors of the NX being a portable console hybrid that you can also use in your living room, but how much of a portable console is it if they're still developing lots of things? I sort of had this image in my head, which I guess is wrong, that they would merge everything on the NX and that everything else would be forgotten. But they still have many millions of 3DSs in the wild, so they're not going to stop developing for the NX, for the 3DS from one day to the next. It's got to take a while until the NX has a fully viable install base. So I guess I answered my own question.
That's the big point, the install base. There are so many versions of the DS out there, 3DS, DS, 2DS, all in between, that a parent is probably happier to buy a new game on the 3DS for their child than buy an NX and then be like, well, it can be in the living room, but they can also take it with them. But if they lose it or if they break it, then it's not going to work in the living room.
And it's also more expensive.
I'll just get a new game for their 3DS. As well, buying a whole new console. So until they see a definite everyone's thrown their DS in the bin moment of some kind, they're not going to stop letting the 3DS print money for them, basically.
It makes sense.
Sony stopped the Vita because no one was buying games, basically. Like, they stopped making the new versions and that, but there are still games for it. It's just nowhere near as big as, a 3DS is.
Anything else, basically. I guess 3DS games is good. It's not with the world excited for the 3DS, for the NX. I guess it's a little bit underwhelming to hear about 3DS games, but it's good. And my guess is that we'll hear about the NX sometime in September, maybe even around the Tokyo Game Show, which is happening on the 16th. I think of September, maybe around that would be cool. At this point, I really just want to know exactly what it is from Nintendo itself. So,
and if it is portable, I'm really hoping that it just transfers all my street pass data straight across. And all that info, because if it's portable, then I don't want to carry both of them on me. Because for a while I had two 3DSs, because I got a new one and I still had my old one, and I was just carrying them both around so I could get twice as many puzzle pieces and stuff.
Hardcore, man. I really hope that they are working towards a unified, account thing. But even with the new system, it was ridiculous how I didn't manage to log into, like, there's a Nintendo account and then the 3DS thing. And I mean, there's like two or three different types of accounts that you can have, and they're linked together, but it's super confusing, super confusing.
Yeah. I think when the NX comes out, it's going to be one of two things. It's going to ride a very fine line of it works, or it's going to be, oh gosh, when is the NX2 that makes this so much better? Because Nintendo takes huge leaps with their technology, and the same with, like, VR. The first round of VR years ago was not good, and people knew it was not good, but people look to the future and they're like, when they come back to VR, it's going to be so much better. And it's the same with the very first model of the Oculus, the dev kit. Everyone was just like, it works, but oh my god, it makes me sick. The pixel density is not great. There's, all this thing wrong with it. And then the Oculus and the Vive are coming out, and people are like, this is what we wanted. So the NX is either going to ride the line of it works, or it's junk, and let's get version 2 happening now.
Yeah.
So
I really hope they manage to make it from the first, whatever it is, from the first their first try, because I don't think they can afford many more missteps like the Wii U. So I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Have you heard, I don't know if this is common knowledge, but I have a theory about the Wii and the Wii U, like the naming conventions, because originally the Wii was a game, was a console for everyone to play, as in we will play it together.
Yeah.
And then people wanted more hardcore games on it, and it wasn't built for it. And so they were like, all right, the Wii U, because we can play it, but it's focusing mainly on you. And people are like, but now we want games we can play with everybody else. And so it was kind of, if they'd done it the other way around somehow, who knows? It would have been, well, the Wii was a massive success anyway, but it could have been even bigger.
I don't know. I mean, the Wii U was definitely focused on, that was what the tablet was about, the stupid little tablet. But it was, for me, it was more of a response to the tablet craze of the early 2010s, which I mentioned this sometimes on the show. Everyone had tablet components to their games. If you remember, the Division demo that we had a few years ago focused a good part of the demo showing that anyone could join from their tablet and play with everyone else. And of course, the tablet feature was absent from the launch. So I think it was Nintendo jumping on a, the second screen experience in a way that wasn't core to the gaming experience. To be honest, it's in a similar way to what the Wii did with the motion gaming. It was a huge hit, but it wasn't a huge hit with gamers. It was a big hit with very, very casual gamers who weren't, you know, just people who would use it a couple of times. So I know this isn't popular, but I have an argument that Nintendo's hardware innovations are not successful and are not their strength. I would argue that the Wii U definitely wasn't one. The Wii, it wasn't one for gaming. It was one for entertainment. And again, this is something that people use a couple of times. The 3DS and the DS, my argument is that all of the games that are really, well, maybe not all, but a large majority of the games that are successful on DS aren't successful because of the two screens. Again, the 3D part of it, everyone would agree it's really not needed. But even the two screens part of it, it's absolutely, I mean, some games were designed with two screens, so they make use of it. And there are good games that make use of those two screens, but I don't think they're good because of the two screens. They're good because they're good games. They just happen to be using the two screens. So basically, my argument is Nintendo is good at game design, not at hardware innovations. The only one that is a huge improvement was the analog stick on the Nintendo 64. And that was obviously added to every console. If maybe people don't remember, but the PlayStation, the iconic PlayStation controller with the two thumbsticks initially didn't have them. The original PlayStation controller did not have the analog controllers. That arrived with the Nintendo 64. So anyway, bottom line, my argument is that the only actual gaming innovation in hardware that Nintendo ever did successfully, and again, there are caveats around that successfully, is the analog stick. The other ones, DS, 3DS, Wii U, are gimmicks. And they don't... Yes. Yeah.
But when they go for a gimmick, they swing for the fences. That's for sure. And when I just thinking about it, then the tablet Wii U, like the tablet, that to me kind of looks like a half step between the tablet craze and VR, because you had to actually, for some games, you had to use it as a like as if you were looking through it, and you had to look around the room and stuff, and it was kind of more augmented reality, but it was more virtual reality because it didn't really use the room you were in. Kind of thing. And so it seems like a half step between the two, but that's just my thinking.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe it seems like something that didn't have a lot of deep foresight. It was kind of a, oh crap, the Wii is too, we need to do something new now and let's do this. And they didn't really think very deeply about what they could do with this feature, and they just went with what was kind of popular because the second screen at the time, people were, watching TV with a tablet on their lap or with a phone on in their hand, and they still are, but it was new at the time and it seemed like a threat to the gaming experience. And so they figured, well, they want a tablet on their lap, we'll give them one. And it wasn't well thought out, but anyway, all right, let's move on to Pokemon Go, which apparently has peaked. And I said a few times that I didn't think Pokemon was going to be the AR revolution, or even, you know, the revolution that some people thought. It was a summer craze. Certainly, it was a very successful craze. I would be very curious to see how many people still play Pokemon now. And I'm pretty sure it's not. It's a small fraction of the people who downloaded it. But at least, I mean, according to analysts, and we all know how they're always right, the game has peaked. It went from a high of 45 million players to 30 million in the middle of August. I would suspect it went back down significantly from that now that we're in September. But I don't know if we'll ever know for sure.
I think it's more, I think the other thing is probably in the same way when you're leveling in any game, it gets to a point where it's like, okay, I need a little bit of XP, a little bit more. Oh God, now I need like a million to level up once. And it's like that moment for a lot of people is like, you know, I'm not even going to bother. That means I have to catch like 500,000 Pokemon. How am I going to do that in a reasonable amount of time? And it's just one of those things. It happens. People stop playing because, you know, they're sick of taking their phones out all the time. I mean, I look at it occasionally every now and then. When I went to Melbourne for the Legion launch, I actually managed to catch a Kangaskhan and a Blastoise in the airport before I left. And it only crossed my mind to take my phone out and check Pokemon Go, because I'm like, you know what? I'm at the airport. I've never even bothered looking. Like, I haven't been to the airport in a good long while. We'll see if there's any Pokemon around. Like, I just happened to think about it. Like, if you go somewhere new, you just like, oh, maybe I'll see what Pokemon are here. And the other thing is, like, if you live in a city, like in a really big city, you're going to find more Pokemon, which means you're probably going to be playing more because they're always around you. Whereas I live in just the suburbs in Sydney. And there's one Pidgey and one Weedle near me, and that's it. Whereas if I was in the city, there'd be a ton of Pokemon like crawling all over me, which is just kind of one of those things. That's how the game
After
works.
A while,
but
it
at the
gets,
same time,
it gets tiring for a lot of people, I suppose. But
yeah, I mean, I know people who are still playing it, and they play every day. And
I'm sure there's got to be some for sure. But
yeah, I mean, there are people I know that still go. Well, it's Sunday afternoon. We got nothing else to do. Let's go for a walk. We'll walk twice around the lake, and then we'll sit down where the where we can put an incense on a thing. We'll sit there for half an hour, have something to eat, and then we'll just go home. Like I did that with my friends a few times, and I think we ran into a guy who had been walking at the lake for like 5 hours. He's like, "Yeah, I'm a marathon runner, and I'm two Magikarp away from evolving a Gyarados." It's like, wow, when did you start? About 5 hours ago when I got here. It's like, oh, geez.
All of these things you're saying don't mean anything to me. It's like as I've said a few times, I'm not a Pokemon.
I'm speaking French.
Yeah, basically, that's what you're doing. So, yeah. I mean, yeah, I'm sure there are going to be people who do keep playing it, as there were people who were playing Ingress back in the day, and maybe they still do, but
Ingress is still alive.
Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, at least it was going to peak, of course. It was ridiculous. Of course, it wasn't going to be the same amount of people that would keep playing for years. I think that was obvious. But anyway, we'll see how it keeps evolving. NVIDIA has made... That's something really interesting to me. Basically, they have a team that is tasked with showcasing the NVIDIA graphics hardware with games. And they made basically a Fallout 4 mod with better graphics, a big mod with a specific quest line to showcase the power of their NVIDIA cards. And I don't know, there's something really surprising in the idea that a hardware developer would create a team for mod developing to take advantage of their graphics card. It's cool somehow. I don't know.
Yeah, it seems... I think in the eyes of some people that actually do mod, you know, Fallout and Skyrim and stuff, I think it may be a little bit cheating. Because it's like, you guys know how far you can push. Mm. No, you guys know how far you can push your own technology. We have to figure that out on ourselves. And like, there's a Skyrim mod, I don't remember when it came out. I think it came out like recently or a few months ago, that was bigger than Skyrim itself. And it was a totally new story on a new continent. It was basically a whole new game that a ton of people had worked on for like a while.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, they, you know, they take so much time to do it. And then like, at the same time, you've got the businesses, the Nvidia specifically, who's just like, you know what, see what you can do with the game. Like, it runs on our system and we want to see how we can push our own system, but it also works for, like, we don't have to make our own engine. We don't have to make a custom engine to run stuff. We don't have to, you know, do up all this crazy stuff. We don't have to put in the development time to make the box, the sandbox, to then stick our card in it. We just, you arrange the sand a little bit in someone else's sandbox, then we'll stick our card in and see how it runs.
Yeah, which, I mean, it doesn't prevent anyone else from doing it. It's just something extra for people who like Fallout 4. I don't...
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's cool. I don't see I understand that maybe some mod developers are like, well, yeah, of course you can make it insane because you're paid or something, you know?
But, yeah. This has no downside. That's the thing.
Yeah. No, I agree.
They're not doing anything bad in any way. Like, they're not, you know.
Yeah.
But.
All right. PlayStation 4 Slim. We mentioned it a couple of weeks ago, and it's been basically completely 100% leaked. It's been unboxed, reviewed, everything, and we're expecting the console to be announced on the 7th with the PlayStation Neo. That's still the idea. I've seen a couple of comments though, sort of saying, oh, well, this is the same thing as Microsoft is doing with the Xbox One S and the Scorpio that's going to come out in 2017. And that entirely misses the point of this whole thing. Yes, the Slim is kind of the same thing as the Xbox One S, but that is standard. It always happens in all console cycles for, you know, the past 20 years. That's not a surprise that there's a PlayStation 4 Slim, which is basically going to replace the existing model for the next 4 or 5 years. What is different, or we'll see, I guess, is what they do with the PlayStation Neo. If they announce a release date that is a little bit closer than sometime summer next year, which is when the Scorpio is going to come out, and if they give a retail price, which a few people, including myself, have been saying is the key to making this an easier decision for customers, if they do reveal the retail price, then it's fine. You make your decision, and hopefully it comes out in the not-too-distant future. The big issue with the Xbox One S and the Scorpio was that the S is available now and the Scorpio is available in a year for God knows how much. And so for some people, it makes it into a difficult proposition. So I think that is what might make the PlayStation 4 Slim / Neo different, not the fact that they have one base model and one more powerful model. That you know, is a similarity, but the important difference is availability and price reveal. So I guess we'll have the answer on the 7th. But
When it comes to hardware, this is normal because, you know, as time goes, you know, processors get smaller and things get cheaper to make, and so they just reset the form factor, and so that, you know, if it's smaller and it's using less and it's using smaller parts, then it costs less to make. And so they can lower the price. And it's the same as, you know, graphics cards. the next graphic card comes out, the next graphic card comes out. Instead, all they're doing is like, well, we can just shuffle around what's in here and make it out of slightly smaller parts, and then we can make it smaller, make it smaller, make it smaller, and there we go. Now we can sell it for a little bit less so people don't feel as bad having to spend X amount. And I think the funniest comment I've seen about this is someone was like, oh my God, finally, my PS4 is small enough, I can just put it in my pocket and walk away with it. And it's like, no, it's not going to be that small, but if you think it is, you're going to be a bit disappointed.
slim is a type of jeans too, so maybe that's the reason.
Yeah,
It's obviously when they've been making the device for 4 years, they have either the processes and the CPUs get, you can print the same piece of silicon with a more thinness, and that costs less, obviously. And it just, I mean, anyway, we all know how these things work, but I guess we'll have to wait for the 7th and see exactly what it is. But that Neo thing is the bigger question mark for me, and we'll have to see how that goes. Overwatch is going to be free to play on consoles for the weekend. It's happening on the, is it the 8th? I can't remember. There's a weekend where Overwatch is going to be free to play on consoles. So if you want to try it, you can go and check it out. And that is on the weekend of September 9th. So about a week away. So you can do that. And if you want to play with your friends, that might be a good opportunity. Season 2 has just started as well, so if you want to compete in the improved Season 2, you can do that too. And finally,
actually, speaking of Overwatch, did you participate in Season 1?
Yes.
Did you get more, I can't think of what they're called, the purple points than you were expecting from your rank?
No, I don't think so. I got the number that they said they were going to give. I didn't even check because I know that I wasn't supposed to get enough to buy a weapon, a golden weapon anyway. So I didn't really check, I think.
Yeah, I was about rank 45 and I was surprised that I got 20 points. I'm like, oh, that's, I was expecting like 5 or 10 because I was under the 50%, like under 50. And obviously, I didn't read any of the documents, but it was a nice surprise that I got more than I was expecting.
So the 20 points are out of how expensive are the weapons? It's like 300. No, I think it's
300.
It's 300 now. Yeah.
Yes.
So yeah, the thing about this is that as bad as everyone felt, it turned out that the player base was really narrow in rank points. They were like, the majority of the player base was between 40 and 60. So they had to make divisions that were really small, like from 40 to 45, you got that much. From 45 to 50, you got that much, you know, that kind of thing. And that was one of the issues, I think, with the competitive mode that they fixed now with season 2 and the different categories, you know, gold, silver, bronze, all of this. Was giving you an idea of how good you were, because as we mentioned, being rank 45 doesn't feel particularly great. Or for me, rank 49, 50 is just like, whatever. But actually you were, you know, the example they gave was that at rank 60, you were in the top 6% of the players. And
yeah,
clearly rank 60 doesn't tell you top 6%. So I think that was the main issue there.
I think it's the same as Hearthstone. Like, if you hit rank 10, you're in the top, like,
5%
of people in the game. And people look at it as, like, I'm at 10 of whatever.
25, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, that doesn't feel great. And it's not expressly stated anywhere. Like, at the end of a season, it would be nice if it's like, hey, you hit X rank, you're in the top percentile.
They do at the end of the season in Hearthstone. They do tell you you're in the top whatever percent at the end of your season. They say it. Maybe you've done it so much you don't pay attention anymore. But,
no, I have not played Hearthstone in a little while. Like, specifically the competitive stuff.
Yeah,
I
So they do. And I think that was something that was really great, that is really great about Hearthstone, is that they do combat that feeling of, oh, well, then that's crap. I think that they have to find ways in Overwatch specifically, but every competitive game, to make you understand how not crap you are, because it, as we've discussed a few times, you always feel like you're not very good. So, all right. I think we're reaching about the end. Quick mention that Deus Ex is out and available and getting pretty damn good reviews. So if you haven't played it, or I mean, if you've played the first one and you liked it, the first reboot, of course, and you liked it, then you might be interested in that one. We haven't played it, however, so we're not going to be spending too much time on that. And before we get to Legion, I just want to mention that King of Fighters 14 is out, and I did talk about it quite a bit over the last few months, and I always feel like this is something English audiences aren't really interested in, but I've gotten a few people contacting me and saying, actually, we love fighting games, and we love, Street Fighter and King of Fighters, the Japanese fighting games that are a little bit more technical than the American ones usually. So, feel free to talk about it. So, guess what? I'm gonna. And just for a few minutes, mention that it is, especially for me, it is an incredible joy of being able to get back to that series specifically. There is definitely some nostalgia going on. I mean, the game is good, but I'm enjoying it a lot more because it reminds me of countless hours and evenings spent playing the different iterations of King of Fighters at a time when everyone was playing fighting games and that was the thing you would play. That game specifically, there have been other ones. I mean, King of Fighters 13 isn't bad, but it's not quite the same style. You can feel that it went in a different direction, artistically, and even to an extent, gameplay wise. But the 14, it feels like what I was hoping for, which is getting back to the original team, the original spirit. And yes, the graphics aren't great. They're better than when the game was originally introduced, but they're really not. They're subpar for sure. But the gameplay is intact. It is really good. It's very tight. It feels like the King of Fighters specific gameplay in the world of fighting games. However, it's also somewhat accessible if you are a fighting game fan. I think I talked about it with Jocelyn Moffat when she was on a few episodes ago. Stylistically, it's very engaging. There's this kind of Japanese anime feeling of like power and anger when they shoot out their fireballs and their special moves. It feels very Japanese. And if you are a fighting game fan, so I guess the question is, would I recommend it to someone who is not a fighting game fan? And I don't think I can. I think it's relatively approachable as a game, but if you're not a fighting game fan, if you've never been a fighting game fan, it is still, the joy of it is in the combo system and the complexity of the combo system. And it's kind of like recommending a driving game if you're not a driving game fan. You're obviously, I mean, probably not going to enjoy that experience because you don't like the core elements of gameplay. King of Fighters is a little bit like that as well. There are other games like Mortal Kombat or even Street Fighter to an extent.
Yeah.
Where
I was going to mention that, like, if you want to get someone into a fighting game, you're probably better off showing them Mortal Kombat and being like, look at all the crazy, stupid things you can do with just a simple two-button press. Like, and then you can show them all the fatalities and all the really, not really complex, but more complex stuff. And then from there, they can, you know, move into other, more, like, learn more of the complicated combos and then be like, is there something more complicated that I can try? And then they can move to possibly King of Fighters after that. Like,
yeah,
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's a good way of putting it. I mean, there are in things like Injustice or Mortal Kombat, which are developed by the same teams, there is joy beyond the fighting. It's the craziness, as you were saying, the fatalities, which are gruesome, and these kind of things. Even in a game like Tekken, you know, Tekken, if you're button mashing, you do fun stuff. It is extremely rewarding to be button mashing with certain characters in Tekken. You're going to infuriate your friends who know how to play because you're going to beat them with a few ridiculously random kicks and punches. In King of Fighters, not so much. But and Tekken, again, is a very precise game as well, if you want to play it like that. King of Fighters is much more pristine, I would say. It doesn't really have that kind of dirty button masher managing to do something. But if when you manage to do something, it feels like you've accomplished a lot more than button mashing, of course. I mean, I don't know. There's a cleanliness to the design of King of Fighters and a brilliancy to the art of King of Fighters, which I'm really loving. And there is a demo. I mentioned it. There is a demo available on PlayStation 4. It's a PlayStation 4 exclusive. And it gives you a little bit of what the game is. It's only 7 characters, so you're not going to get a lot. But there are a few characters where you can, with whom you can get to certain elements of it that are fun. But I'm really loving it, and I hope that there are some people out there, former fans and maybe new fans, that are into video games, into fighting games, period, that want to give this one a try, because I really think it's worth it. And I think I'm going to be playing it here and there on a regular basis. I think it succeeds in doing exactly what I was hoping that it would do. And I'm ecstatic for it. So thank you, SNK. And I hope it's only the beginning of the revival. We'll have a lot more in the coming years. Now the last portion of the show, we're going to be talking a little bit about WoW Legion. So yeah, it's the 6th expansion for World of Warcraft. Lots of hopes riding on that expansion with the content route for the previous one. And tell us, how do you feel about the game? It's only been out for a few days, but I'm sure you have early impressions already.
I love it. It's given me the sense of the same as like when you start up a game like Far Cry or like Assassin's Creed, and you look at the map and you just see the entire map covered in dots, and it's like, oh gosh, there's a lot of stuff to do. Oh boy, there's a lot of things to see. That's the feeling that I get with Legion. It's like, I want to go through every zone. I want to see everything. I want to do all the raids. I want to do all the dungeons. I want to get all the toys and mounts and everything. And it's just like, there is so much, and it's going to be great. I believe this expansion was the expansion everyone wanted instead of Mists of Pandaria. And I hope that people are happy with it, because prior to Mists actually being launched, like actually being revealed, a lot of the buzz was, you know, we're going to be playing as a demon, or it could be the Emerald Dream. That was also the point where the Dark Below was patented by Activision.
Copyrighted.
And so people were like, oh, copyrighted, that's right. And everyone's like, oh, that's the next expansion. And it's like, well, that actually turned out to be an expansion for Destiny. And people were like, the Dark Below, so it has to do with the dwarves, which means Magni's coming out of the crystal and all this. And it's like, every single thing that I heard people say back then, that's this expansion.
That's interesting, actually. I never really made the connection. I thought that Mists of Pandaria was an amazing expansion, but then again, I worked for the company at the time, so maybe biased. But
I loved that expansion. A lot of people did. Visually, it looked the best. And story-wise, it was great up until the very end when, same as every expansion, everyone just gets bored of doing the same raid over and over again. Yeah. Which I don't like that sours an entire expansion for people. It's like, do you not, like, yes, of course, you don't like this raid. Do you remember leveling? Do you remember, you know, seeing everything in this world? Do you remember this? Do you remember that? Yes, but no, I hate this expansion because I had to do Siege of Orgrimmar for a year. It's like, well, then clearly you do not like the World of Warcraft. Yeah. You just like raiding and you just want more raids and more raids and more raids. And well, I guess there are people like that, but I guess at the same time, you need to enjoy the leveling process and seeing everything for the first time, and don't let the end of an expansion ruin the rest of it.
I agree with the sentiment for sure. I think there is validity to the idea that when you have a content route which is as long as the one we had in Mists of Pandaria, or even worse, the one in Warlords of Draenor, it's legitimate to say, well, there's nothing left to do. Still doing it and complaining that you're still doing it feels a little bit silly. I would admit to that. You can just stop playing, I guess, is my answer. But that's also not a great solution for a game company and for the game's health as a whole. But certainly, I agree that it does sour people on other things. And the problems with Mists of Pandaria was that people were fixated on pandas and sort of decided that was dumb. But then they realized when the expansion actually came out and they were playing it, they realized how pandas is still a little bit out of place, I would say, in the game.
Well, they were originally in Warcraft 3.
Of course, but
existed in the universe, which a lot of people didn't actually realize. A lot of people like, Kung Fu Panda, blah blah blah. It's BS. Of course. But then people are just like, do you not remember playing that? Do you not remember playing Chen in Warcraft 3? Do you not remember seeing the Pandaren in that sort of in that game? They do exist in this world. There's not much reference to them before Mists, but they're fully fleshed. It wasn't just, oh, I guess we'll just go with, I don't know, Panda and make it work on two legs.
I agree. But it's still, I mean, I can understand how people would feel they feel out of place. But, I mean, bottom line, I thought Mists was a beautiful expansion. I loved it. There were issues with content drought at the end and content drought at the end of Warlords. And all of that is absolutely true. Now, getting back to Legion itself, I honestly think I had high hopes for the expansion. Everything I had seen made me think that it would be a really good one. I don't think I was expecting to have such a good time in, at least as we were saying, the first 4 days of the expansion. A couple of things. I think the first element, which is making me have so much fun, is that principle that they've talked about, which is going back to the fantasy of the class. And we've experienced it with the gameplay and the gameplay revamp for every class that we saw with the Legion pre-patch. The other thing is, that doesn't apply. I mean, what I was going to say is it doesn't only apply to the gameplay, and that's what I didn't realize. The order holes feel awesome, and the artifact quests, your special weapon quests, they're not all fantastic. They're all good, but some of them are fantastic. And
yes,
it feels so, for some, I don't know why, but it feels so engaging, I think that's the right word. It feels so engaging to have that experience as your class, as opposed to the regular quests, which are fun as well, but the regular quests, which are, which everyone is going to experience. And I understand why they didn't do that before. I think their reasoning was absolutely valid. The idea that if you spend a lot of time doing a specific thing for one specific quest, for one specific class, it means only a 12th of your player base is going to experience it. Maybe a little bit more because people have multiple characters and maybe they're going to level all of, you know, a few of them through that. But only a part of your player base is going to experience it. So we would rather, is there was their philosophy, we would rather spend time developing something that everyone is going to experience and make that awesome. I get that. However, the fact that they decided to throw that out the window with this expansion, which is heavily based on a lot of content for a specific class, is a ginormous success. And I didn't expect it to be as fun and engaging in the way it is. That would be the first thing. I have a second thing afterwards, but yeah, go ahead.
How many artifacts have you collected?
I have the four on my druid and one on my mage. So I'm focusing on the druid. I'm level 109 at the moment. The mage has only just gotten his artifact. But the mage quest, the mage artifact quest was super good. And two of the four druid quests were super good. I guess two or three, and one was okay.
Yeah. Now I have four artifacts so far. I've done all three Hunter, and I've done the Brewmaster Monk because he's kind of my second main. Because I mostly identify with the Beastmaster spec, and I've played it for so long, doing that quest line was just unbelievable. The quest line itself was so. It was just fun, and it was awesome, and it was really funny, especially. You go from your class hall to
Don't spoil it.
Into a vault, and then you have to go find the weapon itself elsewhere. And from the lore of the weapon, It's really funny because a lot of the characters, for some reason, think the dwarf that's with you is Bran, Bronzebeard. And multiple times they're like, oh, look, it's Bran. And he turns around and he's like, I'm not Bran. Stop calling me that.
Yeah.
After like the fifth time, I'm just like laughing to myself. And then eventually he's like, I'm not, you know what? I'm Bran. I don't care. Call me Bran. And he just gives up. And he's like, and I was laughing so much.
Go ahead.
Some of the quest lines are light and funny, like the Beast Mastery one. But then you've got some of them, like the Marksman and Survival ones, are a little darker and a little more serious. So they've struck a balance, I guess, with some of the classes, and they've kind of made a class fantasy and then either kind of gone lighter or darker with the storyline, I guess. I'm not really sure, because the Brewmaster one was a bit of both. It was a little bit funny, but it was also a little dark.
I think a lot of, a couple of things that you said really resonate with me as well. The fact that you identify with your class, because you've been playing it for probably, you know, multiple years, whoever you are.
Since Cataclysm.
Yeah, well, for you, but I mean, any player is going to have played it for a while. And so since you identify with it so much, the fact that they're sort of stroking your class attributes, that sounds wrong, sort of makes it even more joyful than if it was just they were talking to everyone. It feels like they're talking to you specifically in a different way than they were in Warlords, where they also put you in the center of the story and made you the commander of this assault and all of this. That still felt like it was targeted at everyone. This feels like it's targeted to a portion of everyone, obviously, that class and that that spec. So it feels a lot more personal. So that definitely speaks to me, and I think it explains a little bit of why it feels so powerful in that experience.
Yeah. Actually, I have a question for you. Have you looked at who you can eventually get in your class hall as a champion?
Yeah.
Character?
Yeah, there are a few names that made me smile. I'm not going to say who, but there are a few names that are really fun, yeah.
The first, I can say this for the monk specific because it's the first two you get, Chen and Lili. As soon as I walked in there, they were like, we need to get some people to help you. And I'm like, okay, it's probably just going to be two random people. And it was like, well, Chen's over there half asleep and Lily's over there drinking. And I'm like, oh my God, that's awesome. And I was like, I was so happy. And for hunters, there's a named person that dealt with fair bit in Warlords that comes back. And it's really cool. And the class halls themselves are just spot on. They look so great. And the flavor for them is great. As a hunter, I realized how much of an idiot I was. I was taking the flight path from Dalaran to the class hall when on the opposite side of the circle, there's a person standing there with a giant eagle next to them. If you talk to that person, it's just a load screen straight to your class hall with no flying time. And I'm like, oh my God, how did I not realize this? Like, four levels ago.
The class halls are really participate in that fantasy as well. I think you're very right in that. At least the two I've seen, it again strokes your class ego and makes you feel special, which is what you want when you're playing a game like this. You want to be made to be made to feel like you are the person the game is talking to. And all of this succeeds. And the class hole for Druids is lovely. And, you know, I'm sure it's going to wear off, but Druids are all about natures and nature and small animals. And now, you know, I see, what's the name of those? Like the centaur, female centaur. Oh my God, Lunara and the other ones.
Lunara from Heroes. Yeah, they're centaurs, aren't they?
No, but the male, the centaurs are male and they're... Oh God, okay, someone is going to yell at me on Twitter. But yeah, I'm like, they're laughing and I'm like, oh yeah, flowers and small animals. It's amazing. And you know, it's like, it feels... The class fantasy so well. And when I first landed in the... Sorry?
Oh, I was just going to say, in the Hunter class hall, a lot of the legendary, like, epic loot and legendary bow are actually on the wall. There are a whole bunch of, like, animal pelts and, like, the head of animals that have been killed. But on the left-hand side of the class hall, on the wall... You can actually hover your mouse over it and it'll show a thing. And it actually has Thoradol on the wall. Like the legendary bow. And like it's got a whole bunch of other ones, like a whole bunch of other guns and bows just kind of on the wall that you can hover over and it will tell you the name of the item, which is really, really cool.
They're dryads. That's the dryads. Name I was looking for. So basically... The class holes are really successful, but that's again that's only one part of the game, and I feel like when you were saying, you know, there's lots of things that you want to try, there are many different parts of the game that feel very fresh and plentiful, and it's like you're in a candy shop and you're eating all the candy and there's always more. The main portion of the leveling experience, I started with a zone called Val Shoah, and that was incredible. I mean, it's probably the best leveling zone I've played in the entire game, like from 12 years. It's the other ones are really good as well,
I personally started in High Mountain. I haven't actually gone through Val Shoah yet.
Okay, no spoilers. I haven't done it yet, so I will Australia and slap you if you spoil anything.
No. All I was going to say is the Tauren in High Mountain are wonderful. There's a specific Tauren who's a storyteller, and I was standing there in front of him, and I noticed that his horns were two different colors. I was like, oh, that's weird. The light's going a bit funny on them. But then I actually zoomed in, his horns were carved in such a way, and it looked like he'd painted a pattern on them in like a darker color, and I was like, wow, I would never have noticed that, because he had like the giant horns. There are so many toys everywhere. Have you found a ton of them?
I found a few of them, but I mean, it speaks to what you're saying. It speaks to the attention to detail that they've put everywhere. And the entire quests for each zone takes you through, I mean, there is an epicness in the adventures that you live through that I don't think we've seen in that way in any other expansion. It feels like major stuff is happening everywhere, yes, all the time.
And they're using a lot more cutscenes as well.
Yeah.
Like actual, like hard cutscenes.
Pre-rendered, yeah.
Yeah. Which is really, really cool that they can just kind of throw in like a 30-second cutscene that makes it feel a lot, I don't even know what the word is. It feels a lot nicer than just having two NPCs stand there talking and you can just kind of run around in circles.
Yeah.
So, clearly. Yeah.
And it's, I mean, there are, the last thing I want to say is how beautiful the world looks. They've always had the stylized elements to the game that made it feel, you know, artistically competent, and even more than that. But for some reason, there haven't been as memorable zones in the game for a while. I think the elements, the you know, landscape elements in some of those zones. I'm thinking about the one Stormheim. Some of the gameplay, the geography elements in Stormheim are majestic. I mean, you look at them and you're in awe. You know, it reminded me of that feeling when I played a dwarf for the first time or whatever, and I came across that that view of Ironforge carved in the mountain, you know? And I looked at this and I was like, oh my God, this is a fantasy world. And I'm seeing things that don't exist, but I'm still seeing them and they're wonderful. And this made me feel like that.
Yeah, that actually happened with me as well in the zone that you just mentioned.
Stormheim?
I had to go across this bridge and I was running towards the bridge, and then there was, like, because it's really foggy, the fog started to clear, and across the bridge, across a field, was a giant mountain. I'm like, okay, there's the mountain, that's where I gotta go. And then I realized, oh, the mountain has been carved into, and it looked like something straight out of Lord of the Rings. And I actually stopped and I was looking at it for like a couple of minutes, like, wow, it looks really cool. I'm like, wait, why don't I just go over there and have a better look? And so that's what I did. I literally just rode past past all the quest NPCs.
Yeah.
And I just looked at it because I'm like, this looks really cool. It's the same with High Mountain. The main, where all the Taurens are in their giant...
Again, don't describe anything. City. I just want to discover it. Don't
the
say.
The city itself is brilliant.
Okay.
That's just looks... A lot of the stuff, like almost everything, looks awesome. Have you read the achievement names for questing in every area?
No, I haven't. I haven't. I've read a few of them, the ones that I did, which are incredibly funny.
Yes, there's Ain't No Mountain High Enough for High Mountain. I think Azuna is Azuna Matata.
Yeah.
I don't even remember the other ones.
Yeah, it's just silly. It's almost dad jokes, which is
pretty much
kind of funny.
Yeah.
And you know, I flew from Dalaran to I think it was Stormheim, and I flew over Suramar, which is the last zone. And again, there's a feeling of fantasy that for some reason hasn't been as strong in previous expansions. You go over this immense city, which is bigger than a capital city for, you know, for your faction. But you know that at some point you're going to be able to go down there, and all of those tiny places that you're looking at from very high up, you're going to be walking around in them and discovering what is where. And of course, you know, after 3 months, it's all going to be just numbers and, you know, quests that you have to click and go there to fill up your bars. But there is this magic for the first few weeks after the release of an expansion that is really unparalleled. And in, with this one, it seems that they have done something really special, really special.
Yeah. Especially flying from Dalaran, it's like, do I want to look ahead and watch the zone, like the top of the zone kind of take shape as I fly? Or do I want to look down and look at everything? Yeah, like, I want to do both, but I can't. You have to either look forward
just
and
go
see
back and
everything
forth.
There. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, there's so much stuff. Like, once I hit max level, I don't even care about dungeons. I want to hit max level so I can do archaeology, so I can do my leatherworking stuff. I want to get all the artifact weapons across all seven of my alts. Like, I want to do all of it, and I'm just like...
Yeah, those artifact weapons and the class holes makes you want to play through all of it. Like, I want to find out what happens with all of these different classes. Like, how do they realize the fantasy of the priest and of the death knight and of the demon hunter and all of those?
Yeah. And a lot of the story elements too. It's like, how does this artifact weapon have a story to it? Like, like Ashbringer, which is
of
kind
course,
of the
this one is
most
there.
Obvious one. It's like, how do you get Ashbringer? I mean, everyone knows what happened previously before Legion, and it's like, well, where's Ashbringer now?
So it is really, I mean, for the first week or so, and there are, you know, quest lines for professions, and we've only talked about, I don't know, a third of what there is to do in this thing, but
we haven't even mentioned world quests.
Yeah, there's,
or once
there's,
you hit 110, like,
yeah,
there's
exactly,
so much to do before you hit 110 that you don't even need to worry about 110 until you get there.
Yeah.
And even once you're there, it's like, I've still got other stuff I need to do. There are plenty of quests and looking in every zone. And actually, the first archaeology dig that I found, I got just enough to make one artifact, one archaeology item. The first one I made was pristine. And I was like, I got to do more archaeology now. I got to do more. Because the pristine, the ones that in the archaeology building in Dalaran, there are a whole bunch of shelves. And you actually, like in your garrison, you had that room to put them. There's now a whole bunch of shelves that you can put them up in Dalaran in the archaeology building, which is really, really cool. The only thing is that archaeology is a lot smaller now. Like the zone, the area that you dig in is a lot smaller. But most of the artifacts that you'd make need more pieces to them. And each small area can be dug 9 times instead of 6, which is helpful. But in saying that, there's only like 10 things per faction, or actually less than that. And there's 3 factions in archaeology. So they've kind of streamlined it a lot, which is really, really exciting. Yeah.
I think they have streamlined a lot of the things, really. I mean, it applies to professions, it applies to pretty much everything. So, I mean, clearly we could talk about this for hours, but I want to bring this to a close. And just saying that, obviously, I think it's pretty clear we are very much enjoying this expansion. I don't know how long that's going to last, how long the honeymoon is going to last, but looking at it from here, I really think that this is for me the best beginning of an expansion, I think, almost ever. My favorite expansion before that might have been Wrath of the Lich King, I think. This one, I feel like it's hard to remember, but I feel like I'm enjoying it even more. So
yeah,
for me, this is a great success, but I guess we'll see. I hope we get some sort of numbers from the company to gauge the success of the game. I know they don't release subscriber numbers anymore, but if the people who have played the game, if the players, if the expansion gets the success it deserves for this early experience, I think the numbers should go up significantly, which obviously they would, because, you know, they've been dipping a lot. But
In six months from now, I would love Blizzard to release a stat that is X number of artifact weapons acquired by the players.
Yeah.
Like, how many people have multiple alts and each of the specs. It's like, we have 8 million players, but there's 100 million artifact weapons in the wild now. And it's like,
that would be, yeah.
Holy crap, everyone's playing everything.
It would be interesting because it would be vague enough that you couldn't deduct the number of actual active subscribers, but it would still give you an idea of the popularity of the thing. So, yeah. I mean, we have 4 artifact weapons each, and I'm sure you know the average is going to be in 6 months, somewhere around 4, probably.
Yeah. Well, so. I have 7 alts. Yeah. And I think I want more than 1 artifact weapon on each of them. And I think I'm just going to do all of the quests for all of them anyway. So I'm going to have a lot of artifact weapons. The one thing I wanted to mention is take the Pandaren mindset to this expansion and just slow down. Don't rush. You don't need to rush to 110. Unless you're one of those bleeding edge raiders who has to be 110 and fully geared for when raiding starts, like my co-host Cinder, she's taken some time off work to actually hit 110, and I think she's already 110 by now. And she's like, she has to be ready to raid in like, I think 2 or 3 weeks. And so if that's what you're doing, do that. But if you're not, just take your time. Who knows how long till the next expansion? So take your time and just space it out. Unless there's something you really, really want to get, like me and the moose from archaeology, it can wait.
I actually met someone in the game a few days ago that was on their second character. And we started, you know, we grouped to speed up the quests, and he was going so quickly. And at some point I was like, hey, so you're going really fast. Are you racing to 110? And he said, yeah, this is my second character. I'm raiding, so I have to get really quickly. And I was like, oh, all right, well, I'm reading the quests, so, you know, maybe I'm going to ungroup because I'm going to slow you down. And he was like, ah, yeah, you know, I don't even read anything. I have to go there so fast. And I understand that some people play like that, and it's fine. It's just, I feel like they're missing so much of what makes this game a great game. I can't help but feel like this is too bad for them. You know, I feel bad for, and they're getting what they want out of the game. So I'm not, you know, trying to, but it's still a bit sad that they're not experiencing the majesty of some of what the game has to offer. So I would definitely echo your recommendation.
They might be one of those people that charges through, gets to 110 and is raiding like crazy, but then as soon as there's downtime, they're like, okay, now I'm going to go back to my, you know, my character who's on a different server, who has nothing to do with the raiding I do, and I'm just going to go through and look at the zones. It's a way to do that. Like, I know people that race through a game on easy mode and then go back and just grind through it on hard. And then when they play through it on hard, that's when they learn the story. Because they have to go through it slower. And it's like, well, that's an interesting way of doing it. But, in the end, they see what they want to see. Hopefully, everybody gets a lot out of this expansion. That's really about it. Have fun.
I'll be very curious to see how well it holds up at endgame. Now that's, you know, the first half of the contract is successfully fulfilled, and the second half is endgame, and I'm really curious to see how well it holds up. It seems like they have a good couple of things going, but we'll see. I'm sure this is not the last time we'll talk about WoW Legion in this show. Although I do try to keep it to a reasonable amount, because this is not about a show about Blizzard games, but I just love those games. They have some magic sauce that I like. So there you go. Anyway, that's gonna be it for the show. Thank you so much, Jake, for being on. Why don't you tell people where they can get more of what you have to offer, especially on WoW?
Well, I do a podcast myself, The Reigns of Azeroth. It mainly started out of wanting to do a podcast about mounts, And in under 30 episodes, we covered every mount in the game. And now we're moving, we've moved on. We're covering toys and achievements. And this next episode is going to be on archaeology, which is why I'm so, like, so hung up on it, because a lot of the archaeology stuff is just really cool. A lot of people overlook the profession, but I enjoy it. We're on Twitter. The show is at Reigns of Azeroth. I'm on Twitter at Spaz Wesson. That's about it, really. Actually, we do stream our episodes live on Twitch at twitch.tv/Reigns of Azeroth. I'm trying to do other things on that channel as well, like me doing mount runs and stuff, but with Legion out, I probably won't be doing many mount
You're
runs.
You're a little bit busy. That's understandable.
Well, I mean, I'm... I don't even know how many mounts I have. 200 plus, so there's not that many more mounts I can get just by running raids. Like, I've got Memeron's Head, I've got Invincible, actually, speaking of Memeron's Head, you actually get to ride Memeron's Head during the Beast Mastery quest, which is really
funny.
Yeah,
we didn't mention how they take you in the old world. And I mean, yeah, again, there's so much we could have mentioned. But
yes.
All right. Okay, cool. So Spaz Wesson on Twitter, that link will be in the show notes, and I'm sure you can get to everything from there. For me, it is Not Patrick on Twitter, and of course, the show is available at FrenchSpin.com. You can find another show there called The Phileas Club, where we cover actually serious topics like world news and world events, and we do that in a fun way. Hopefully you will enjoy it. The last one was about the burkini ban in France.
I enjoy.
Oh, you did. Thank you very much.
Yes, I enjoy. I enjoy the show. I enjoyed that episode.
It's an interesting topic. Let's leave it to that.
Yeah.
And of course, well, I guess that's it. And we will be back in a couple of weeks, not years. And by then, we will have the details on the PlayStation Neo, and maybe even, well, I guess we'll have news from the Tokyo Game Show. Maybe not the NX, but maybe yes. So we'll have to wait and see. Talk to you then. Bye.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.